our stations, and from the Pew Charitable Trusts, working to improve the voting process for all Americans at pewtrusts.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy. Dedicated to preserving our planet, the Subaru Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, achieved zero landfill status with nothing from its manufacturing efforts going into a landfill. It's part of what makes a Subaru. Information at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910.
It's 106. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Celeste Quinn is away. We have an interview from the AM 580 archives from July 9th of this year. As this is a pre-recorded program, we are not taking phone calls this afternoon.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Betsy Block is a food writer. She's also a married mother of two. On the program today, we're going to talk with her about pursuing the perfect family meal. Is it a mission impossible? To begin with, there are things that one person would rather not see in the kitchen, let alone on his or her plate. Then there is the question of sugar, candy, and cake. This is just the beginning. While there are challenges, Betsy Block and her family, husband Andy, son Zach, and daughter Maya, do have their triumphs as they try to go local, toxin-free, humane, and healthful. Betsy says it hasn't been a cakewalk, but in the end, it's come pretty close. Betsy Block has written a delightful memoir about the ups and downs of family mealtime and her family's food makeover. It's called The Dinner Diaries, Raising Whole Wheat Kids in a White Bread World. Listeners, please join us with your stories from the family table. I look forward to your stories, your questions, your comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number, that number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Betsy Block has written articles for many publications and websites, including the Boston Globe, Boston Magazine, Wonder Time, and Epicurious.com. She's also a contributor to the NPR online weekly food column, Kitchen Window. And you can look for her on the website at dinnerdiaries.com and mamacooks.com. Betsy Block's book, The Dinner Diaries, Raising Whole Wheat Kids in a White Bread World, is published by Algonquin Books. The paperback, by the way, is printed on recycled stock. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Betsy, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me
today. Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. This is such a fun read.
Oh, thank you.
And
I really appreciate that.
Yeah. It's good information, but it's clear that you have a sense of humor and you are able to go with the flow.
Sometimes better than others, but that remains the goal every day.
Yeah.
I thank you so much, and I think this came out of my, I don't like being preached at.
Yeah.
It shuts me down. It doesn't open me up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I knew there was so much I needed to learn, and it turns out my kids don't like being preached at either.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I also learned during the writing of the book. So it's a good thing to keep in mind, you know, the light touch.
A spoonful of sugar.
Exactly. Yeah. Fair trade, organic.
Well, how's the family? Andy, Zach?
Yep.
Maya?
Everyone's off, hopefully eating their homemade, you know, healthy lunches or done with them by now. And, you know, Maya's getting all sorts of junk and treats at camp this week, and, you know, status quo in a certain way.
Yeah, well, it's not forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, tell us how old the kids are. Zach's a preteen and Maya's 5'6"?
Well, Maya's now 7.
7.
So I started writing when she was
okay.
5. And Zach, who turned 11 while I was writing the book, is now 12.
Okay.
So he really is sort of out in the world much more than he was even a year ago.
Yeah. Well, at the outset of the Dinner Diaries, you say, in a nutshell, mealtime was a mess.
Mm.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad was it?
Well, you know, so on my scale of 1 to 10, it felt like a mess. But as I've been talking to people, I realized, no, we were not eating fast food every night, by no means. But so in terms of health, it was, you know, it was we were probably at a 5. But in terms of boring, we were maxing out the scale. It was just really limited, really limited.
Same old stuff.
Exactly. When you take our, I have, you know, food lists of what everyone will and won't eat, and when you try to correlate those with the other ones, it leaves about 5 things that everyone will eat. So, you know, when you consider picky eaters, which is what most of us are dealing with, it was pretty tough for me because I am a food writer and I love food.
Yeah, but you also have your food dislikes.
I have, I just dislike cilantro, but I have a few allergies, just a couple.
Yeah, yeah. Now, tilapia, though, you're not fond of.
Oh, this is true. You're right. That's right. But I have eaten it since I finished writing it because we were served it, you know, at a friend's house. And if you cook dinner for me, I will eat it and I will love it.
Well, give us some sense of... When you started off on this quest for a food makeover, you began by writing down the foods that each of you would rather say no thank you to. Give us some idea of what was on these lists.
Right. Well, actually, Zach and I are, you know, definitely both great eaters. Zach must take after me in that way. He's pretty adventurous. You know, he was eating snails and black bean sauce when he was 5. So we're good with Zach. You know, and if I'd only had him, if I hadn't had a second child, I might be one of those obnoxious parents who said, it's just what you put in front of your kids. And, you know, not true. Because then we had Maya, and she goes the other extreme and, you know, will eat a handful of foods. You know, your typical, I mean, she's your typical chicken nugget and french fry girl. So it takes more effort to get her to expand her offerings. And then the real challenge in my household is my husband. I adore him. He's a wonderful man. But he's definitely the pickiest adult eater I've ever met. I'm not, you know, who knows? I don't know why. But the big thing, I think, in a household with kids is if you can get both parents on board, you're pretty much good to go. But that was part of my challenge, actually.
Yeah. Dad's list is pretty extensive.
Yeah, it's it gets really frustrating sometimes. But I've had people say to me, you know, what a nightmare. And I think, no, this is not a nightmare.
No.
You know, this is a bummer. It's a drag. It's something to be dealt with. But it's not a nightmare. But, it's pretty impressive if you haven't met my husband.
Well, now, when it's his turn to request a special meal, what does he like to have?
Well, the thing about Andy is that he's a phenomenal cook. And, in fact, you know, he wooed me with food originally. So just last night he got the ingredients to make a lobster, like, salad with lobster meat on top of it. And we've made all these adaptations, and so it's fortunately farmer's market season around here right now, and so it was just an all local salad, and lobster is of course local to us, and it's, when you look at the fish list, it's on the yellow category, so we're still getting it, you know. So he's incorporating my sustainability notions into his cooking, and he's a great cook. So but as far as, I mean, he still would probably like a steak every once in a while, but you know, this information is actually sinking in for him too, and he cares. He's your average man, but he also, you know, and who wants his steak, but he also really cares when he learns about what's going on in our food supply.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of conundrums
here. Oh, absolutely.
All kinds of minefields. So How did you sort through these issues? And they include, you know, the humane handling of animals for food, what animals are fed. You mentioned lobster, so there's seafood and crustaceans.
Right.
Seasonality, another issue. Locality. How do you begin to negotiate all these twists and turns in the road?
Very carefully, one step at a time. It is overwhelming, and that's exactly why I wanted to, you know, learn more, because I didn't feel like I was an educated consumer, and I didn't feel like I could teach my kids about food because I didn't feel like I could understand what was going on. There's so much information, so much of it's conflicting. People have different agendas, you know, that they're trying to put forth when they're telling us about different foods. So I just very carefully picked sources that I thought would be the most reliable sources, who had the least to gain from the information they were putting out, you know, other than just wanting to impart good knowledge to people, you know, nutritionists, farmers, like that. And then I just picked my way through. It was a trail of breadcrumbs through a dark forest, like very dark sometimes. But
crawl into the oven and see if it's warm enough.
Exactly. Ooh. So, you know, we just started. I started with a bang, and everyone let me know that I was going too far too fast. Mm-hmm. So then I had to slow it down. And it was an interesting process. Not, you know, there's the learning about the food, and then there's the imparting that knowledge to your loved ones who are not necessarily with you in terms of your excitement about the topic or your passion for the subject. So those are two very different things. You know, the information, you can find the information, although it will take a while. It definitely took a while to research all these different areas and sort through them one by one. But then there's getting people on board with your changes.
Yeah. Well, tell us about this fellow that you met along the way. His name is Roy Nilsen.
Mm-hmm.
And the farm that you visited that he's responsible for.
Right, the farm school. Actually, from what I understand, he's not there anymore. But it was really wonderful to meet him. There's a chef who buys whole hogs from this farm once in a while, and so we tagged along with him while he went out to the farm and met Roy, who was the farm manager, met the pigs that he would be buying. There were two of them. And he was a great guy. I thought, whatever food you want to raise for me, I will eat, you know, happily. And he loved the animals that he was raising for meat. And so interestingly to me, he had been a vegetarian until he started working at the farm school. And then he started eating meat again. And the way he explained it was, it's about saving these small, unknown breeds, these rare breeds of animal, and that this is the way we do it, is by eating them. And it was really interesting. So he was an incredible guy.
Yeah. What do you think is on the horizon for livestock and for poultry and for dairy in terms of what consumers want?
Well, you know, depends on which day you ask me, I guess.
Yeah.
But I certainly, I wrote this book to reach an audience that maybe hasn't been as tuned in to these issues, and maybe hasn't read a lot of the polemics out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do believe that when most or many people become informed about the matters, they will actually make different choices. And so on a good day, I'll say to you, I believe that consumers will demand that our animals be raised differently than they are now. So that's my hope anyway. So,
yeah. We get into the issue, though, pretty quickly of affordability.
Absolutely. So the thing about that is that the most expensive part of most of our meals is the animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
And by reducing, or, you know, if you want to eliminate the animal protein in your diet. It's a great way to kill a lot of birds with one stone, so to speak. Or heal a lot of hearts, I'm not sure, or something. Yeah. It's better for your health. It's better for the environment. It's, you know, it's about the humane treatment of animals. So that's sort of a good, easy way to start, you know, making a humane, healthy diet more affordable is really reducing the amount of meat and using it as a condiment, not as the center of the plate. And we really do, amazingly, actually, when I was writing the book, you know, my son, once he realized what I was up to, got kind of upset because he didn't want me to ruin his life as a happy meat eater. But eventually, you know, this was after the book was done. About 4 months ago, we were out to dinner, Chinese food, and he has his wonton soup, and he's sort of poking at that rectangle of pink pork in the soup, and he says very casually, "I think I'm going to stop eating meat now." You know, and I always try to play it cool, and I say, "Oh, really? Why is that?" And he says, "Well, you know, because I've been listening to you." So that was amazing, you know. So he hasn't eaten meat since then. And the rest of us, I'm trying to support him in that. So we really aren't eating meat right now at all. And if he changes his mind and he starts eating it again, we really do go. I mean, we stock up our. I got a freezer for my birthday. That was my exciting present, and that's what we do: is buy local meat that's been locally slaughtered, because you know the local slaughterhouses are closing down, and we have only a handful left in New England. So and we use it as a condiment. So it's a really big way to save money, is that.
Yeah. Well, what is it that Michael Pollan says in a nutshell? It's eat less, mostly plants.
Right. Yeah. It's nothing your grandmother wouldn't recognize.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And Marion Nestle said something similar. She said, eat less, move more, lots of fruits and vegetables, and go easy on the junk food. It's not that any of this is hard to understand. It's not that the information isn't out there. It's about applying it, though, to life with kids, which is a whole different animal.
Yeah. Well, tell us now about, here was a bump along the way. This involves trying something new, and it was a dish called Caribbean sweet potato gratin.
Ah, yes. Famous Caribbean.
And, you know, it sounds lovely.
Right.
But as you say, it's all style over substance.
Yeah. That's the thing, you know, it can't just be about, we're also served at one point, if I can remember, a millet muffin sweetened with orange juice and soy milk and just a little more molasses than usual, you know, and if it was edible, that would be great, but it was so not delicious. And so the thing about this is finding that balance between healthful, sustainable, toxin-free, and also really delicious, because kids aren't going to buy it, and I don't want it either.
Yeah, and then what do? You throw it away. And
well,
then
that was terrible. When I realized that, I thought, you know, the only reason I didn't mess around with that one was because you can end up wasting more if you keep trying to fix something.
Yeah. Well, describe it for our listeners.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, so that was the sweet potato casserole with coconut milk and black beans, and it looked beautiful and it sounded wonderful, and it was flavorless and it never came together. And, you know, I wanted to like it and I didn't, and no one else even tried to like it because it wasn't good. So I waited till the next day, tried it again to see if the flavors would have melded. They hadn't. So I just ended up wasting it. And that is that's definitely one of the problems of trying new foods and new ingredients. But, sometime I might try to mess around with it and liven it up and, you know, and save it so that it was tasty, but sometimes I've done that and ended up just wasting more ingredients trying to save the thing. So, so who knows? And who knows? I can't remember who had been sick then or who had been sleepless or, you know, you're just worn down. So sometimes you don't even have the energy to try.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now you're a food writer, So I would think that you would be better than many of us in terms of sizing up a recipe or an idea.
I have, a certain knowledge base that I've gained, during my writing career. But I'm also a mom, and I have these, and, these picky eaters in my house. And I would say that trumps food writer every day of the week.
Yeah. Some days you just need a French fry, right?
You know?
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, food writer Betsy Block. She's also wife and mom. She is the author of The Dinner Diaries, Raising Whole Wheat Kids in a White Bread World. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, your stories of family meals. They are also invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. How often do you eat meals together?
Most nights we eat dinner together. And actually, while I was writing the book, the kids were usually, watching TV during breakfast, and I got inspired to shut the TV off in the morning. So we're actually eating breakfast together when, something, just cereal, we'll all eat it, in the living room or whatever, but it's a much nicer way to start the day. And then we can see that, in fact, that Zach is not eating breakfast, and we can tell him that he needs to eat something.
Yeah. Well, you're out ahead of the game here, two meals a day.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's also, I'm trying to remember my kids are not signed up for so many activities, actually. So they're around.
Uh-huh.
And my husband works 5 minutes from home, and I work from home. So we have this setup that makes it, doable, which is really great because it is one of just the best parts of our day usually.
Yeah. Do you spend time together in the kitchen?
The kids, not as much. Really, if they're in the kitchen, they want to be baking something. They wanted to involve chocolate and sugar. And the thing is, I'm actually a good baker. I did bake professionally a long time ago, and I love to bake, and so it's hard to be the one saying no, you can't bake something, because you had an ice cream party at school and then your friend gave you a cupcake and then this and then that. But I really have cut back on it. So as far as dinner goes, it's mostly my husband and me, although the kids do make a mean breakfast in bed.
Oh, really? What do they make?
Well, Zach's a great breakfast maker. He likes to make, veggie omelets. And they'll arrange, or Maya will make dessert for the family, fruit dessert, which is what we have during the weeknights. And she'll arrange the fruit in pretty patterns on the plate and bring it out to the living room very ceremoniously. So they do actually take a lot of pride when they create stuff.
Yeah.
They just wish it were more brownies and fewer fruit plates.
Well, are there other family dining rituals you have that our listeners might appreciate, might be able to put into practice to help get things off to a good start?
Well, speaking of, I just said that eating dinner together is often one of the best parts of our day, which it didn't used to be as much, before we did the makeover, because it was always sort of frustrating. But now that we're sort of all, or my husband and I are working together more, it is. But that's actually something that we do at dinner every night, is share the best parts of our day with each other. So I try to do a moment of silence or a little, blessing or a little moment of thanks, and no one was buying it. So Maya came up with this great idea for a best part of our day. And, even if you've had a lousy day, you have to come up with something. Because there's definitely something that we can all be grateful for every day in our house, no question about it. And if we don't bring it up, definitely one of the kids will bring that up, because it's fun and it sparks conversation.
Yeah, and it's also a way for everybody to kind of focus a little bit.
Absolutely, onto one conversation and just on something positive.
Yeah, so you're going to calm down a little.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think Is it your dad or your grandfather who said, take your time and enjoy it?
Yeah, that was my wonderful grandfather who said it because he was always the last one eating, by the way. So, you know, he would tell us to settle down. He was still eating, but, you know, the message is so beautiful. Take your time and enjoy it, you know, and he did. He enjoyed his meal. He enjoyed his life. You know, people loved him. It's a great way to, it's a great philosophy.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember about mealtime when you were a kid? Was it messy?
It was, it wasn't so great. You know, I have, came from a family of divorce, and no, it was nothing like what I have now. Nothing like it whatsoever. And definitely the baked chicken, baked potato. And there's nothing wrong with that, but after, you know, I'm 42, after 40 years of it, you want something else. So Andy had a very, you know, sort of classical dinner at 6 p.m. on the dot every night with the four of them, and the meat, the starch, you know, the frozen veg, the white bread on the table, very, very 60s, you know. And but, you know, it was a very safe, I think, happy association for him. So that time together is so special and so important, I think, in so many different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking back to when I was a kid, and it seemed we had a lot of the same things over and over again. But, you know, in those days, my mother prepared three meals, you know, breakfast, lunch, whether it was a box lunch when we went off to school or whether it was through the summer. So it was, that was a lot of work for her. So I you know, she did what worked, and we were all healthy, and we, turned out okay. So
that, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it is a huge amount of work, especially if it's on one parent. I was just folding the laundry a little while ago and thinking, yeah, this is definitely not where I want to be every day.
Well, tell us about the lunchbox and the food your kids eat when they're not at home for lunch. The food they eat at school, what kind of issues crop up there?
Right. Well, so my kids don't buy lunch. That's just the way it is. I mean, Zach has bought it, lunch a few times and has not wanted to buy it again, you know, and Maya's bought it a couple times and, you know, we'll let her buy it once in a while, but mostly they have to take food. But the thing is, well, our local schools just instituted a no birthday treat policy starting next year, which I am pumping my fist about because there's constant cupcakes in the school. Never mind the cafeteria, where there's so much junk. The teachers, I mean, God bless them, give out candy for good behavior. You know, it's so, it's just it's ubiquitous. As soon as they walk out the out of the house, you know, they're on their own and they can make their own choices. But this is where not just preaching at the kids and not just making rules that they have to follow, but really educating them comes into play. Because I guess a friend, you know, another kid offered Maya a quarter to buy ice cream one day, and she said, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. My mom wouldn't like that. And so she kept the quarter anyway, though, which is another issue. But, you know, Zach, who's 12, is really starting to be on his own much more, and he'll be out with friends who are all going to a pizza place, you know, and he's come home a few times and said, yeah, I got a salad, or I see him after the after we had started talking about more marketing to kids and soda and weight gain and all this kind of thing, he would definitely, he buys water when his friends are buying soda. So this is the thing, these they the goal, of course, with this, as with anything in parenting, is to get our kids to take ownership of what we want them to learn. And it seems to, I think, work. It's working with my kids, and I've heard other parents whose kids are much older say the same thing.
Yeah, even though there's been resistance along the way, eventually, apparently, it sinks in.
Exactly. It's about persistence.
Yeah.
Really sticking with it. And also, I had to sort of stop being so preachy, which I learned. And I did.
Yeah. There's a great story at the end of the book about the cakewalk. You got to tell it.
Well, it's just that as I was wrapping up the writing of the book, every year at the end of the year, there's a cakewalk up at school. And, you know, we went up and first we had to decide what would happen if they won a cake. You know, because if Maya eats sugar at night, and I'm sure this is disputed and doesn't matter, if she eats sugar, you know, science might say that this is not true. She eats sugar at night, she's up. She could be up till midnight. You know, she's just has this incredible reaction to it. So what are we going to do if we win a cake and you can see her starting to rev up? And Zach gets down on one knee and says, you know, listen, if we get a cake, you know, we'll have slices in our lunch tomorrow, and that's Zach's solution. And
yeah,
that seems like such a great idea, you know. And then he convinces Maya to go along with it, and we all compromise. And then, in fact, he does win a cake, and he comes over and gets Maya, and they walk over to the table to pick out a cake, and he lets her pick out, you know, the big smiling pink and green.
The
and
sugariest cake in the room.
Sugariest cake around, and they're happy, and there's no fights because they don't even ask for a slice that night, and we give it to them in their lunch tomorrow, and then the next day, I mean, and then, some of it disappears into the trash while they're at school, which they don't notice.
Yeah. What a million-dollar moment, though, that was.
I mean, for so many different reasons. You know, for the family harmony, for the love, you know, between my two kids, for their love of, you know, cake. You'll never get past it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's all about compromise.
Well, tell us how you've handled Halloween.
Ha, Halloween.
Yeah, there's a big one.
It's a perennial, and then it starts 6 weeks, you know, of more of the same. We bought Zach off. It's just as simple as that. We finally upped our offer to, you know, buy out his candy. It was essentially enough to see a couple movies, you know, and we said you can eat it tonight, and then we give you money, you give us the candy. So it worked with him. He's old enough, you know, to start really caring about this stuff, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And Maya there was no offer high enough for her. She wasn't giving in. So I've heard some parents, I mean, there's so many different strategies. Someone was telling me the other day that they let their kids eat it for 24 hours, and that was it. So I did a week because, just because, you know, it's so important to them, and maybe because they're getting so much less of it at home than other kids are.
Uh-huh.
So she had her candy for a week, and he had his one night, and then he had money, you know, to go to movies.
Yeah. Well, Halloween in my neighborhood is a big deal.
Yeah.
Lots of kids. They all get dressed up. Everybody's really nice. And I have found, though, that I'm not totally to the point where I'm offering only a healthy-ish kind of a thing, like small bags of pretzels.
Yeah.
But I have offered kids a choice now, and the pretzels go pretty fast.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your other choice?
Well, last Halloween, we had small bags of pretzels. We had small bags of Teddy Grahams, and we had, like, small fun bars, candy bars.
Nice.
And the kids get a choice. And the interesting thing is it takes them a while. They are actually thinking it over.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then occasionally we've run out. I mean, this is how big a deal Halloween is, trick-or-treating. And then I'm reduced to... one year I put seashells in pennies in the basket, and the kids were thrilled.
Oh, that is fantastic. I was going to say you weren't toilet papered.
No. I said, sorry, kids, we're all out, but maybe you'd like a nickel or a penny or a seashell.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Actually, you're reminding me that this year we had we gave out one little piece of candy, and then we ordered a just in bulk rubber duckies.
Uh-huh.
So that's what we did this year. I forgot, you know, in terms of giving stuff out, and talk about a hit. Those were a huge hit because they came in all different, you know, there were devil duckies and, you know, angel duckies, and even the older kids liked those. But, you know, but no one else is giving out seashells or rubber duckies, I don't think.
Probably not. Probably not.
But we still do our part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the kids are really happy with it, and I don't know, it's a really fun night for me to answer the door.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I know. It's very adorable.
Yeah, yeah. And even we even have older kids who are just as delightful come. Middle school kids and high school kids all dressed up, and they're having a great time.
Yeah, it is. It's a special night for kids. There's no two ways about it. People have asked me, do you say your kids can't go trick-or-treating? And no, of course, no.
Yeah.
I can't do that. That's like taking a little piece of their childhood away from them. But we've got to work it out.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to making decisions about what's for dinner, how much of a say do the kids have? And do you include them in making out shopping lists and expeditions to the supermarket?
Well, it's changing a little bit because, Zach can stay home by himself now. So if he really doesn't want to go, he doesn't have to. If he's willing to hang out with Maya, we might leave her. If they have a special request they want to make, they're welcome to. But we don't consult with them about our dinner menu. So they get what they get,
Yeah.
And once in a while, if Maya's making a fuss, she'll have a bowl of cereal. But mostly we make things that, we know they will like or at least that they can try. And she, last night, she said she went to bed a little hungry because, she wouldn't eat the dinner. There was salad and there was leftover whole wheat couscous. There were tomatoes, something else that I can't remember. All of which she likes, uh-huh. and which for some reason she wouldn't eat. And we were at a local park, and we couldn't just grab her a bowl of cereal. And so it was, well, this is dinner, so you need to eat it. And if you don't eat it, you're going to be hungry. And maybe the next time she'll eat a little more,
When kids are hungry and it's not mealtime, is snacking okay? And what kind of snacks do you have around?
My kids are hungry 24/7. Aren't all kids?
Yeah.
Aren't they mostly hungry not at mealtime? they are mostly hungry not at mealtime in my house. So, this has been a big thing, is getting potato chips out of the house, and that was my bad. I admit it, because I love potato chips.
Mm-hmm.
But they are out of the house, and we have, now the baked multigrain chips, the baked blue corn chips, lots of. Well, right now it's kind of easy because we have a lot of local, produce.
Yeah.
And Zach loves vegetables, actually. And, they can have chips are sort of there if they've already eaten a healthier snack, even the baked one, then they can move on to stuff like that. But really, we need to start with the produce. And so Maya's learned to ask for an apple with soy nut or peanut butter, mm-hmm. things that I can completely get behind.
Yeah. Now, are they okay going to the refrigerator by themselves?
She's not there yet, Still have to prepare her 30 snacks a day.
So but, in all of this, what's been the hardest thing?
Well, the hardest thing, I think, is being the one, not the only one, but definitely the most committed one around, We all want to feed our kids well, but some people actually are not on board with that. So I just feel like it's, again, once they leave the house and having them in the larger world, and, there's a 12 to 15 billion marketing budget that companies spend solely to market junk food to children.
Yeah.
That's just a huge, budget that they have that we're fighting against as individuals in our own little houses. And then they go over, Maya has a friend and she goes over, and they have a snack drawer that the kids, at the kids' level, that's just filled with, you name it, cookies and candy and chips and this and that. And it's just to their convenience when they eat that and how much they eat.
Mm.
That's hard because she thinks that girl's mom is a lot better than I am.
Mommy says yes is always a better mommy, right?
Exactly.
At least in the moment.
That's right.
Food writer Betsy Block is our guest in this portion of the program. She's the author of The Dinner Diaries, Raising Whole Wheat Kids in a White Bread World. You'll find her on the web at www.dinnerdiaries.com and at mamacooks.com, both delightful websites. The book is published by Algonquin Books. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon. We've got a few minutes left in this portion of the program. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Is there, in the book and at your website or websites, there are recipes. Maybe you'd share one or two with us or talk about a couple of them.
I will. I'll tell you actually my very, very favorite recipe, which is in my book. And this recipe is so magical that actually yesterday Zach asked if I could please buy some kale. Magic.
Wow.
The recipe is for kale chips. All you do is you wash and dry and cut, tear into large pieces a head of kale. You spray it with some olive oil, put on some salt and pepper. Someone else made some recently, and she put on Parmesan cheese, sprinkled some on. And you bake it at 350 for 10 to 15 minutes until it's crispy. It's crisp, just little like crispy crackers. My kids will stand over the pan just shoving it into their faces when it comes out of the oven.
Wow.
It's shocking. And I don't think my kids, I mean, I'm sure not all kids would like it, but I know absolutely other kids who do. And it's easy, and kale is one of the powerhouse vegetables.
Yeah. And then you can pair that with it has tofu in it dip.
That's right, exactly.
So that's avocado and lime juice and silken tofu and cilantro, if you are so inclined.
That's right.
Some coriander, some garlic, canola oil, and salt and pepper. And you can use this. You can do this with an immersion blender. That's handy.
Yeah, so that makes it less to clean up.
Yeah, I bet Zach can. Apparently he does make this.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Yeah, he can cook. He just, like I said, would prefer it involved sugar.
Yeah, and then there's a recipe in here. Butternut squash in a pie.
Mm.
That sounds really good. It's not quite summer fare.
No, exactly.
But it sounds really good, and it's squash baked in a pie shell.
That's right. I mean, you add the cream and the eggs and the sugar, but it's delicious, and my kids love it, so of course my husband doesn't, but that's just life.
There's something else for him around, I'm sure.
That's right. But, yeah. That's a great, we're not that, it seems like it, but we're not that far away from fall here anyway in New England. So it's sort of around the corner that the squash will be showing up at the markets.
Yeah. You were talking a moment ago about marketing to kids. And I went to your website. I went to dinnerdiaries.com this afternoon. And on the front page there's a link to an article about you in the book. In the Boston Herald, and there in the middle of the story is an ad for French fries, a big stacked burger.
Exactly.
Of some kind. It's everywhere, isn't it?
We just laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, because what else, it's laugh or cry sometimes, really.
Yeah.
And there was another piece in a magazine this last month, I guess, that, the whole top page of the whole top half of the page was steak on white bread. And then there was a thing about my book right below it. it's quite ironic and it's quite, funny sometimes.
Yeah. Well, what's for dinner tonight?
Oh, gosh. I'll have to call Andy.
He's cooking tonight. I know you're doing a lot of interviews.
I am doing a lot of interviews. But actually, after we get off the phone, it's Farmer's Market Day here today.
Oh.
So I will actually go there. I don't think it's the idyllic moment that so many people do. There's jostling and there's no lines. It's disorganized. You're carrying these heavy bags. But it's so worth it. And I mean, of course, I also love it. I'm sort of half kidding, but you know, so whatever I see there, honestly, is what we'll be serving for dinner. A lot of veggies tonight.
Yeah. Is it hot there today in the Boston area?
It's super hot. Yeah. Sweltering right now. Yeah. So probably all the, you know, lettuce will be wilted, but, you know, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, you get it home, you get it in some cold water.
Exactly.
Water. It'll be fine.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Betsy Block has been my guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Look for her book, The Dinner Diaries, Raising Whole Wheat Kids in a White Bread World. The book is published by Algonquin Books, and you'll find our guest on the web at www.dinnerdiaries.com and mamacooks.com.
And that was an interview from the AM 580 archives from July 9th of this year. It's 1:51, about 8.5 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices are now in from the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange, all part of the CME group now. And with the commodity markets, the grain market numbers, here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Tom. Let's take a look at those numbers. A lot of red across the screen today in Chicago. Futures finished lower in the wheat, the corn, and the soybeans. From the wheat pit nearby September, lost 4.75 cents in the composite trade. Remember, we give you the day trade and the evening trade, or the overnight. We call it the composite, so the highs and lows are expressed in the overnight and the day trade. $7.11 was the high, the low at $6.98. Settlement price at $7.06 3/4, down 4 3/4. December futures, $7.40, the high, the low at $7.16. Settlement price at $7.25 5 3/4, down 4 3/4. There are two reasons for that. One, the bulk of the trade now is traded on the floor itself in the open outcry, but electronically, and that includes that overnight session. So really, today's trade started last night when those marketplaces opened. March contracts, 7.58 3/4 the high, the low at 7.39 1/4 for the March wheat. Settlement price at $7.48 3/4, down a nickel. In the May contract, 7.70 3/4 the high, the low at 7.54 1/4. Settlement price at $7.62, down 5 cents. In July futures, 7.84 the high, the low at 7.62. Settlement price at $7.72, down 5.5 cents for the day. Corn futures, 7 cents lower, 5.29 3/4 the high, the low at 5.20 3/4. September settled down 7 at $5.22 1/2. December futures, 5.48 the high, the low at 5.35 1/4. Settlement price at 5.36 3/4, 7 3/4 lower on the afternoon. In the March contract, 5.66 the high, the low at 5.54 1/4. Settlement price at $5.55 3/4, down 7 3/4. May futures in the corn pit, 5.76 the high, the low at 66 1/4. Settlement price at $5.68, down 7.5 cents. And July futures, 5.88 the high, the low at $5.76 1/2. Settlement price, $5.77 3/4, down 7 1/4. March futures, rather December futures for next year, 2009 contract, $5.80. The settlement price for the corn, 2009 harvest month, down 4 cents for the afternoon. September oat futures today, 3.24 1/2, down 2.5 cents. December futures, a 3.44 top, bottom at 3.33 1/4. Settlement price at $3.37 1/2. Down 2.5 cents. Soy complex now. Nearby September beans, $12.06 the high, the low at $11.84. Settlement price, $11.81 1/2, 27 1/2 lower. November beans, $12.07 the high, the low at $11.75 1/4, and a settlement price at $11.78. Down 23. January futures, 12.23 1/4 the high, the low at 11.92. Settlement price at 11.94 3/4, down 23 cents. And the March contract, 12.37 the high, the low at 12.06. Settlement price at 12.08 3/4, down 23 cents for the day. May futures in the bean pit, 12.39 1/4 the high, the low at 12.15. The May contract settled at $12.16 1/2, down 22 cents. And November beans for next year, $11.91 3/4 the high, low at $11.63 3/4, settlement price at $11.66, down 21.75. September bean meal futures 342, the high, the low at $335.50 a ton. Settlement price down $4.40. September soybean meal at $336.80 on the settlement price. October 335.50, the high, the low at $325 even. Settled $325.90, down $7.60. And the bean oil futures from Chicago, September contract 48.31, the high, the low at $47.59. Settlement price at $47.69, down 49 cents. October bean oil, $48.50, the high, the low at $47.58, and a settlement price at $47.84, down 50 cents. During the closing market report this afternoon, which is just now 10 minutes away, we'll talk with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. And then later in that program, we'll hear about the cash grain market with the Andersons Facilities folks from Delphi, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Bob Basedifer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On the livestock side of the CME group today, it was a down day for cattle. Hogs finished by and large up. The October live cattle contract today had a high of 102.80, the low of 101.60, settlement price of 101.65, rather. That was down $1 even on the day. December live cattle had a high of 104.40, the low 103 even, settlement price 103.02.5, down 110. The February contract, the high 105.72.5, the low 104.57.5, settled just up above that 104.67.5, down 112.5. And April live cattle, the high 106.15, the low 104.85, settlement 105.25, down 87.5. September feeder cattle today at a high of 111.20, the low 109.65, settled at 109.85, down 1. October had a high of 111 even, the low 108.80, settled at 108.90, down 152.5. November feeders had a high of 110.15, the low 108.25, the settlement price 108.67.5, down 107.5. And the January had a high of 109.80, the low 107.77.5. Settlement price 108.02.5, down 145. Now to the hogs. October lean hogs had a high of 67.85, the low 66.95, settled at 67.50, up 60. The December lean hog contract had a high of 66.95, the low 65.95, settled at 66.17.5, unchanged. February lean hogs, the high 74.15, the low 73.17.5, settlement price 73.25, down 32.5 cents. And April had a high of 80.67.5, the low 79.85, and the settlement price there 80.35. They were up 7.5 cents. In the pork belly contracts, February had a high of 87.55, the low 85.05, and it settled at 85.72.5, up 107.5. And March bellies had a high of 87.50, the low 86.05, the settlement 86.75, and they were up 85 cents. And those are the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME Group, for today. It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock. And this is WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. It's, again, a minute before 2 o'clock Central Time. Our forecast from meteorologist Ed Kieser. For the rest of the afternoon, a sunny sky and a high of 77 degrees in Champaign-Urbana. Mostly sunny for the most part, totally sunny for the most part across the two states. Maybe some more clouds in northern Indiana and northeast Illinois. And highs ranging from 70 in the north to 82 in the south. For tonight, look for increasing clouds in the western and southern parts of Illinois and in far southern Indiana. Elsewhere, remaining clear to partly cloudy. Lows from 46 in east central Indiana to 62 in far southern Illinois. For tomorrow, in western and southern Illinois and in far southern Indiana, mostly cloudy and a few scattered showers will arrive there. Elsewhere, increasing cloudiness. And highs tomorrow from 77 in far northern Illinois to 87 far south. In Champaign-Urbana, again, sunny and 77 this afternoon. Clear skies and a low of 53 tonight. Winds from the east at 48 miles an hour. Increasing cloudiness tomorrow with a high of 81. Southeast to south winds at 5 to 10. Looking ahead from there, the rain will start to move into